ראה יש מעשה אלוקים, כי מי יוכל לסכן את אשר יפסוד. If you sort of read the parak together, you have the feeling that the ra'eh over here, and in the next word, in the next pasuk, v'yom tov v'hayeh b'tov v'yom ro'o ra'eh, that these two ra'ehs go back on the in pasuk yud aleph, tov chachma im nachala v'yoseh l'ra'eh hashamesh. Now, it's over there we were talking about the ra'eh hashamesh. It means the people who function very much under the impression of the Shemesh. And what's that they, remember we said that the Shemesh in Koheles, Bifrat, and in Kisvei HaKodesh, Bichlal, the Shemesh is always the symbol of Olam Hazeh, and the Royei HaShemesh are the people who are very much under the impression. The Shemesh has a great deal of influence over them. They tend to allow themselves to be influenced by points of view, value hierarchies, which are based on the Shemesh. So the pasuk over there was suggesting what these Royei HaShemesh should do. But now the pasuk is coming along and teaching us that is if you are a Royei HaShemesh. But better than to be a Royei HaShemesh is Re'eyas Ma'aseh Elokim. Try not to be a Royei HaShemesh. Try not to allow yourself to be unduly influenced by what the Shemesh has to say. It's better to look at the Ma'aseh Elokim. It means to look at the world from a mabot of realization that by observing the world, we should be able to see the Ma'aseh Elokim in everything that happens. Kimi yuchal sakein es asher ifso. Who can be misaken if you mess things up? In other words, if you don't allow yourself to realize the hashgacha of the Rabbanu Shlom and how the Rabbanu Shlom guides our lives, leads us where we're supposed to go. A lot of times helps us not to go where we're not supposed to go. If you sort of turn a deaf ear and a blind eye to that, and you don't let yourself be influenced by a hakara that the Rabbanu Shlom runs the world, then you can mess up your life dreadfully. And once you do that, it's mi yuchal sakein es asher ifso. Ashrei, the person who can look into his life and see tangibly Yad Hashem in what happens. A lot of times Rabbanu Shlom functions a little bit behesta, not always posher to see. Sometimes it's very posher to see. I've got to tell you this story. The Meister Yiras Shamayim, it's a Meister Neurom Oid. I have a friend who is a very, very Chesed Tzaddik. He's Isaac in Yonet Stoker in New York, great deal. And every Dover type, he's a big Askan people. He himself is an Oni Ve'evyon, but people give him vast sums of money to channel to areas where they're needed. I just met him by chasm. And he told me, Neuridike Meister. Meister is that the lady, he approached her once for money, she's an attorney, she's a well-to-do lady. And he approached her for money for one of his myriads of inyonim, which he is Isaac in. And she gave him $3,600, which was a choshev nedar. So the next year, same time, without his approaching her, she again sent him in a check for $3,600. Novidan, Bentayim, she had gotten married. So he called her up and he asked her, "Are you sure you want to give this amount of money? Like, now you're married, you have a husband." But no, she's happy to give it. But her marriage was a Dover Neurom Ma'oid. It was a Maisim. She had been a lady who became from somewhere in her life, and her husband didn't want to go along with that. So he ran away and he wouldn't give her a get. And she sat over there in Aguna for 7 years. Her husband was away, nobody knew where he was, and he wasn't interested in giving her a get. Hotzakemachta Maisa, where my friend was approached. He was approached, somebody called him up, an emergency phone call. But there was a Schrecklicher Meister in a former community, a former couple, and suddenly from one moment to the next, the husband went crazy. I don't mean medically crazy, but can't understand what happened. He came along, he says, "I'm leaving. If I have $10,000 by Monday night, you can have a get. If not, I'll disappear and I'll be gone." So the community around this distraught young lady, "Where are you going to get $10,000 from? That's a lot of money." So my friend was called, would he raise $1,000? And they called 10 people each, as I understand it, and to get a hold of $1,000 in 2 days, in order that $10,000 should be available, that this young girl should get a get. So he went to this lady as one of his prospects, and he told her the story. And she said, "Fine, that's a mitzvah, she'd like to have a chel again." She gave him the full $1,000. Gave him $1,000 to pay towards that. A week later, he opens up his mailbox, a letter in there, another $1,000 from this lady. So he called her up and he said, "Ma, Tom, what's the matter? Why did you send this $1,000? He said, "The day after she had given that first $1,000, her husband turned down, was willing to give a get, went to a lot, and she got a get. And that year, then she married again, and that was the mice of the $3,600. That's a neuron erosic, is that? But she chapped herself to chelek in this mitzvah to be meshachre, this other aguna. Well, $1,000 is by return mail, the Rabbi Nisham sent her the... It's unbelievable. It's one of those mices which you sort of... No, it's more than nice. Anyway, so that's the Re'ei as Maise Ho'elokim. So Ashrei is the person who is Zoicha to see the Maise Ho'elokim. Kimiyuchal Sagda Sha'ifsar. The person misses that kind of thing and he doesn't allow himself to see the Maise Ho'elokim. He can mess up things very badly. Now, Kahelis says something now which is very, very true and very smart, something which we can live with from our own experience. This re'eh, this need to try and find a mahalach, I'll keep the Mishpatei Hashem, isn't so wichtig on the Yom Tov. The Yom Tov HaYed B'Tov. A lot of times, when things go well with a person, so he understands, he doesn't understand, he feels close to Hashem, he feels grateful, he feels besimchem. Good things happen, it's a pleasant family simchem, some kind of experience like that. So then often you can find Hashem just by allowing yourself to be nene from the symptom. But uvi yoyim ro'o re'eb. On a bad day when people never have tzoros, then it becomes important for them to try and be makir the Yad Hashem. I have to realize that Rav Hashem doesn't only send us the good things, he also sends us the bad things. And he has his cheshbonos for it. That's an important yesod, but it's a yesod which needs hagdora. Not always is a direct hashgacha traceable. And it's important sometimes, if never something happens to a person. Unfortunately, people suffer sometimes, they suffer very much. And there's always a sakana, there's always a danger that a person who is a big Yirei Shamayim, and something bad happens to him, so he'll say, okay, it must be that the Rabbi Nisham is mourning something from me. Now, what did I do bad? That seems logical enough. And so the person starts looking for chatoim, but he can't find any. At least not worse than his neighbor down the street, or his friend, or his chavusa, or his whatever it is. So why should it happen to me? He knows that he's not worse than this guy. So then sometimes, in a sort of a morbid attempt to castigate himself, so he'll take something which maybe he does wrong, and he'll blow it out of proportion. He'll think he's a terrible Rasha. If he wouldn't be a Rasha, this wouldn't have happened to him. And a lot of times, that can be a very harmful thing. It's not necessarily a good thing, because it's not Emes. And then you blow something, I mean, say a little chet is probably a misnomer, perhaps. There are no little chatoim. We would really be big Yirei Shamayim, we would know that there are no little chatoim. So of course, the person is basically good, tries his best, so he has some chesroinus. Then you ask yourself, I mean, so am I so bad? So then the answer has to be yes, I've got to be a Rasha. That's not always true. But, you saw this in Hashgacha, subjects which are very, very complex, they have a lot of ramifications, and need a lot of careful eon. But the Lemaisa and the Koira seem to yield that it's not always Emes, that every single thing that happens to a person has to be specifically person to person call. A direct hashgacha that this should happen to you at this particular moment. You have to know a little bit about what the matzav is when there's hester ponim in the world. The Chayvus Halvav says at the beginning of the Shah HaBitochen that it's important to have bitochen in Hashem. So the Chayvus Halvav says, Timi b'shevoteach Bezulas Hashem, because let's say that we trust somebody other than Hashem. What is Hashem's reaction? Kimi shebayteach bezulas Hashem, meisya hakadosh baruch hu hashkachosa me'olav, u'meinichoi biyad mi shebotach bo. If a person is bayteach in somebody bezulas Hashem, is bayteach in somebody other than Hashem, and Hashem reacts to that by removing his hashkocha from him and letting him be biyad mishu botacho. In other words, that's part of the educational process of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That the Ribbono Shel Olam says, fine, look, you're not b'teach in me, you want to be b'teach in so-and-so? Fine. See how it's like, see what it's like, see whether you enjoy it, see whether you like it. And see, Avada Gevurah, the end result will be that a person recognizes that he's best in the hands of Hashem, and that is one way in which the Ribbono Shel Olam educator come back to him. Aber es weist euch, that there is such a hanhoga that somebody who is not a b'teach b'Hashem, which of course has surely got different levels and different madregas. But our tendency is, if somebody chas v'shalom gets sick, we run to a doctor, fast, right? And we don't immediately, unless we're very, very erchayim, turn to the Rabbi Hashem and say, well, what chait did I do? Which means that to some extent we're being by teach in doctors. So the Rabbi Hashem says, okay, so be by teach in a doctor and see what happens. Himisha by teach v'zulas Hashem, meisi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashgachos Sameh, lov menicha biyad misha by teach. Al taka leave you to the tender mercies of the doctor. That's the Ramban also in Chumash. She'en daka shel b'nei odam b'refuot elo shebochalot. Ramban says that ideally the Ribbono shel Olam was machnes the inyan of sickness, so that if a person does a chet, the Ribbono shel Olam sends him a sickness to be ma'oreh him that he's sinning. Then when he does tshuva, the Ribbono shel Olam is merapeh him. So he becomes sick because of a chet, and he becomes cured because of tshuva. But where do doctors come into this? Now the Ramban even warns the Gemara in Achover. The Gemara says, "Rapa yirapa, mikan shnitin roshus v'roifer v'rapas." So Ramban says, it doesn't mean that it's nitin roshus for the patient to run to the doctor. It's nitin roshus l'roifer l'rapas. Ramban explains over there that there could be two reasons why the doctor might feel diffident about exercising his skills. First of all, he might argue, well, look, who am I to interfere with the Ribbono shel Olam? The Ribbono shel Olam made this person sick, so who am I to try and make him better? Or he may say, look, I may not be skillful enough. Why should I mess around over here? I may make things worse. So for that, the Torah says, v'rapo yirapa, that it's okay. If you can cure, then go ahead and cure. You've had a decent training, you are a mumcha, you're an expert, trust yourself. The person is sick, he needs you. That's as far as the roifer is concerned. As far as the patient is concerned, ideally we would say, ma loy l'roifer v'sirei l'okim. You don't go to doctor. We do go to doctor. Go to doctor. It's a mitzvah for us to go to doctor. The Vada Gevis, a person is sick, should go to the doctor and try and be cured. That is a moshu of this yisoid of the Chayvus HaZavus, that there's a very sadistic Malbim in Shir Shirim, which I've quoted a number of times. It's important to know. Pasuk over there says, "Hagidol ishoav unafshi, echo tira, echo tarbitz batzoharoyim." Shalomo ehye ka'otyo al edre chaverecha. So the Rayo asks the Doid, Agido lishov o nafshim, echo tirev, and echo tarbitz batzoharoyim. He's a shepherd. So she asks him, where do you look after your sheep? Echo tirev. Where do you shepherd your sheep? I don't know whether there's a verb in English which is the equivalent of tirev from the shepherd's point of view. Where do you pasture your sheep? Where do you look after them, right? Echa tira and echa tarbit bat sahorayim. And where do you cause them to crouch down in the midday heat? So from the pasuk it's mashma that the two hanhogas which the roya has with his sheep, there's a hanhoga of tira that's described in Cheskel, this beautiful perek, Roya Edra, Rakoras Roya Edra, where the Roya is involved specifically with every one of the sheep. If there's one which is too big and one which is too small, and the small ones get pushed away, so the Roya goes and makes sure that the small one should get to the food and to the drink. If the sheep cuts itself on a stone, the Roya comes and bandages it. He makes sure that the sick ones are healed, that the lost ones are found, that the small ones aren't bullied. Now what he gets up with each sheep as the sheep needs his attention. That's tira. But then there's a tarbit batsaharayim. It gets very hot because of the midday sun. So then the shepherd, it's too hot to move around and to be Isaac in every sheep. So he's marbits them. He lets them sit in the meadow. They feel like browsing and grazing a little bit. They'll graze. If they don't, then they'll sit down and sleep or snooze, whatever the sheep do. And the shepherd then doesn't bother with the individual sheep. He sits under a tree somewhere and he looks after them to make sure that the wolves don't come to eat up the flock. But he's not Isaac with every single sheep individually. That's the marshal. So in the nimshel, Malvin sees this as a hayroah of how the Ribbono Shel Olam's hashgacha works. See, that's again, we have the symbol over here of the sun as being symbolic of Olam Hazeh, the Tzoharayim, the fierce sun. So there is a matzah when the Ribbono Shel Olam is mashgiach in a very proteistic way on each person. And he's oisik with every individual, that nothing happens to any individual which isn't directly the hashgacha of Hashem. That's the Echot Tirel. That's when the Tzoharayim, when the sun of Olam Hazeh is not out so fiercely, it's not burning so fiercely. The Tzeil HaChachma, the Tzeil HaKosef, like we learned last week. Chachma casts a tzeil, you're not directly under the sun. So there the Hanhoga of the Ribbono Shel Olam is a Hanhoga of Tirel. But then, Batzoharoyim, and the Olam Hazeh is very, very stark. So then there's a Hanhoga of Tarbitz. Now what if people don't realize or don't look to Hashem, and they're very, very far away from experiencing a Proteus Dika Hashgach and everything, so then the Ribbono Shel Olam is Mabitz then. From afar, he's still Mashgiach, like a shepherd who sits under the tree. But there's not the individual tipple with each yachid. Does it mean that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't care? That's a shalom. Ribbono Shel Olam cares very much, each individual. But sometimes, caring for an individual requires ignoring him a little bit. That's mamish the yesod of the Chayvus Halvavus. Yimishu v'yteyach v'zulas Hashem, Mesi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashgachos HaMe'elav U'meinicha B'yad Mishu Botach Bo. How does that work? It's not because Hashem says I'm not interested. It's not because Hashem says I don't care if you don't turn to me. Rav Hashem cares very much, as much as Rav Hashem can care. But Rav Hashem says you're never going to understand until you learn the hard way. So Moshe Lemo HaDoved Amit, what is this comparable? It's comparable to a father with a child. And the child plays with matches. The father says, don't. You're going to hurt yourself. And kids being kids, so again he plays with matches. The father tells him again he shouldn't do it. Then he does it again, so he gives him a patch. It helps for 5 minutes, and then the kid comes back again. So then there comes a point at which the father will say, okay, so play with matches. And see, learn the hard way that it's not a smart thing to do. So what's the situation there? The pshat is that the father is not interested in the child? Of course he is. But he realizes that the only way the child is going to recognize that it ought to listen to his father is nothing else helps, it's going to have to learn the hard way. So what happens? So he lets the child play with the matches, and it strikes the matches, and it burns his finger. And it hurts. Ouch. And then the child will learn that he shouldn't do it. Now obviously the father is not going to let the child burn the house down, right? Or burn itself up. But a little bit he's going to allow the child to hurt itself. Not because he wants it, not because he doesn't care, but because that's the way the child has to learn that it's got to listen to the father. So that's the Hanhoga, where the Ribbono Shel Olam is manhig his world in an oifen of tarbitz batzoharoyim. Now, versteht sich, that there are no klolim in that. Rabbi Shem runs his world the way Rabbi Shem understands he should run his world. And even if we should say, for example, in a klolistic way, that we live in a matzav, a hest upon him, that's what Golos is, that's what Rabbi Shem says Golos is. V'anochi haste asti uponai v'yomahu. And hest upon him means just that. Hest upon him means that it's very, very difficult to see the Yad Hashem. That's what it means. When Hashem hides himself, that means that he doesn't allow us to see very clearly how things work. Which means that if we're going to look, we're not necessarily going to find. Now that doesn't mean that in his man of Hest upon him, the Rabbi Hashem never opens the curtains a crack. I believe that in the Maisa that I told you, he did. And I'm sure that everybody has his own maises of a hashgacha. Where you do see the Yad Hashem, and you see it very clearly. But there are also times when you don't. We don't have to feel bad about that. If we have kashya sometimes, sadik v'raloi, that we can't understand why to a perfectly good person, a perfectly nice person, somebody whom we see as a tzaddik, as an elocha person, and nevertheless bad things happen to them. And we've looked for chatoim, or the individual himself to whom it happened has looked for chatoim, and he can't find them. So instead of going and saying, okay, I'm going to find something if it kills me, and finding some ridiculous little thing and blowing it up out of all proportion, and looking upon himself as a Rosha and as a no-goodnik, and if I wouldn't be evil, this wouldn't have happened to me. That is not the right hanhoga. The right hanhoga is to recognize that in a zman of hathest upon him, we can't always know. That's what the Gemara says, that in Boye Odom, she is surin boyin olav, yifashvesh b'maisav, a person sees that Yisurim happened to him, he should be boidek his meisim to see what he has done bad. That is true. And if he taka sees in a very direct way a connection between this and that, avada gevis, his initial havana should be somebody's telling me something. He gets his beautiful new Chevy dented, right? And the day before somebody asked to borrow and he didn't lend it. Vesa ganz good why the dent came. Right? That's a fashvish for myself. But let's say he can't find such a direct middle connected middle. So then he should recognize. You know what the Welt says in Fishbresh for Loy Motza, Hitler, Bavoin, Bittle, Torah. So you know, you can learn the Gemara two ways. You know, either, well, he must have battled, right? This is in a way that you couldn't find it when you were in Fashvish B'Maisav. You were in Fashvish B'Maisav, you didn't find Bittle Torah. Otherwise, that's also a fit. So what does it mean, Yitle Bavoin, Bittle Torah? It means that Jesus, you battled in a way that it didn't occur to you that you should really have been learning. Of another way to learn, I don't know which is the Emes, maybe this is Jamal Drushi, I don't know. Yeah, but Pishpish Vilay Motso, Yitle Bavoin, Bittle Torah. Why didn't you find? Because you haven't been learning enough. You would have been learning, you would be more keyed into the Rotzen Hashem, so you'd find the Avera. But why can't you find the Avera? Because you're battling, you're not learning. If you don't learn, so you don't know the Rotzen Hashem. If you don't know the Rotzen Hashem, so you're not going to be able to discover the middle connected. So that's a sort of a narrow line to draw, but it's a idea, I think, which is important for everybody to have, each one of us. Tzoche Amcha Merubin. We all know Yidden with Tzoras. And sometimes somebody wants to come up and he wants to ask, why should this happen to me? Like, why just me? Or why this? Or why that? What have I done wrong? Sometimes it's indicated to take the person by the hand, be mefashvesh with him, is meisim. and say, well, look, maybe Taka, they're telling you something. Maybe this or that is, it could be misaken that. But then other times, the Anhoga should be a different one. The Anhoga should say, don't worry, the Yad Hashem is not always clear to us. That is what Hestaponim is all about. And we can't know. So that's a wichtige Yesod. And I think that Koheles deals with this a little bit over here. Well, that's what he says in Parak Tetzvav. It's a kol ro'isi b'mei hevli. Yesh tzaddik, oyved b'tzidkoi. You have enough tzaddikim in the world who suffer. V'yesh rosha ma'arich v'rosa. And you have wicked people who do just fine. So what? So I think that's the next pasuk. Al te tzadik habe, v'al tishakem yoyser, lomo tishamem. Don't go crazy. No, but don't be a tzadik habe. Don't say, look, everything has to be explainable. Since the Ribbono Shel Olam runs his world al pi the Torah, so I've got to have an answer for everything. You don't have to have an answer for everything. Not endless. You don't have to have an answer for everything. Not everything has an answer. And if you see a tzaddik, which is oivet b'tzidko, and you see a rosh, who is ma'arich v'rosa, so don't be a tzaddik habe. Because in the end, you're going to be mishpoimen. On the other hand, al tirsha habe. Don't say, look, if I can't understand everything, I'm not going to bother. I'm not going to have open eyes at all to the Yad Hashem. Al tisocho, don't be a fool. Anybody who's not a fool can look around and he can see the Yad Hashem in many things. That's part of the chesed which Hashem does. But once in a while, he lets us see. Does. טוב אשר תכוס בזה וגם מזה אל תנח אז יתך יראה אלוקים יתפס כולם. That's the old yesod. The old yesod is use your seichel. Don't feel the need to be eiches dafke in one of the extremes. Either I understand everything or I'm not interested in understanding anything. That's not a chachmatic thing to say. Be grateful for every sign that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives you. And if he doesn't grant you an understanding, so that's fine too. So then you don't understand. Then that's an Avraham Diki Yesoid. That's one of the things that we learn from Avraham Avinu. You know the Medrash at the beginning of Lech Lecha, where you have Avraham and Moses Moshel to the Adam who saw Biro de Lekas. So Biro de Lekas. Efshe, he said, that this Biro, there is no Baal HaBiro, nobody's looking after it. Hits it all of Baal HaBiro, Vama Niyu Baal HaBiro. What's the Maisa? The Maisa is that Avraham, he saw a Biro. He saw a palace. A Biro is a very, very complex, fancy kind of place. Palace, you see gardens, you see orchards, you see driveways, you see tennis courts, you see halls, you see rooms, you see chambers. And that's all with the gewaltige Chochma. It's all balanced, there's a harmony, there's a beauty. Everything's gorgeous. That's what a Biro is. So what's a person supposed to do when he sees a Biro, and then he sees nobody seems to be bothering about it? Dilekas is a fire, nobody seems to be interested. That was Avraham's problem. Avraham saw a world, and that world was a very beautiful world. He saw a Biro. And Avraham, differently than anybody else in his day, recognized that this Biro has got to have a Baal HaBiro. It didn't come about by itself, the world. So he was makir that there is a Ribbono Shel Olam. Baal HaBiro. Aber the Bira was dilekus. He saw that in the Hanhaga of the world, doesn't stem. He saw Tzadik Verale, he saw Rosha Vetoivle. Couldn't see. It wasn't ausgehalten. It looked as though once the Rebbein Shalom had created his Bira, he left it to chance. Just like you have a Bala Bira and he lets it burn. So he didn't understand. After he said that the Bira doesn't have a Bala Bira, could it be that the Rebbein Shalom, after he created this gorgeous world, the Rebbein Shalom gave up on it, is not interested anymore? Hits it all of Balabiras. Rebbein Shem looked out from one of the windows and said, relax, Anihu Balabira. So why are you letting it burn? Zeo Shenem Alechlecha, Me'atzecha, Me'latecha, Me'savicha, Shimi Basu, Re'ir Medrashet, Tahati Aznev. Rebbein Shem was telling him, if you want to understand, you've got to come to Eretz Yisrael. Give it all up. Go from your Atzicha, from your Malatcha, from Besavicha. Leave over your preconceived ideas. Forget about your Chinuch. Forget about your upbringing. Forget about your Besavicha. Follow me. Follow me. And one of these days you're going to understand. So was steht in der Chazal? That there are Zachen which we can't understand. We have to mess by Avraham Avinu. If Avraham Avinu couldn't understand, we can live with the fact that we don't understand sometimes. Nicht alles darf man verstehen. But what Rebbein Shem taught us with Avraham Avinu was, go. Throw in your lot with the Rebbein Shem. Don't remain tied to your preconceived ideas. Don't think that everything has to click exactly the way you feel it ought to click with your vast chachma. If we hope ever to come to a havana of the Rebbein Shlomo, we have to sort of follow Avraham's footsteps. To follow the Rebbein Shlomo unquestioningly. We follow the Rebbein Shlomo unquestioningly. Eventually we come to Hakorah, we come to Havana. What the hell is he telling us over here? Al Titzdak Havah, don't try and understand everything. Al Tirsha Havah, don't give up. Go the middle path, be a Maimon, be a starker Maimon. Hanoch HaRishoyna must always be, as the Yad Hashem, be Mefashvish B'maisav. Fishvish V'loi Motzah. It's Nishazat Tzadik, you're not such a Tzadik. And you can expect to understand every single Hanhog of the Rebbein Shem. Certainly it's no mitzvah to go krum and to go and tell yourself crazy things just in order to manufacture a rational explanation for something which in our Madrega must the Maisa remain irrational. Okay. A real shailen which should be and surely is matrid a person wants to be in Avod Hashem, and that is the difficulty of striking a correct balance between passivity and independent thought. In other words, to what extent do I use my head? There's a Masoira. Really, if you examine Tanakh, you'd see that we've had Chachma in Kahelas a lot. What is really Chachma? So there are lots of rayas that Chachma in Tanakh is used in the sense of received wisdom. In other words, the functioning of the intellect to be Mechadish is not called Chachma. The other words, the Seichel, the Bina, the Das, Chachma is received wisdom. In the Yesodos in the Torah, The Torah says this is a good derech, that's a good derech, that's chachma. So the pasuk says that hachachma to'a is the chachma me'asora shalitim ashahoyo bi'ir. That chachma lends strength to a person, that's in pasuk yutes in zayin. The chachma to'a is the chacham. The chachma lends strength to the chacham me'asora shalitim ashahoyo, more than 10 warriors in the city. So, why? Ki odam en tzadik ba'oretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yechtov. You're going to make mistakes occasionally. Chet, well, we use chet for a sin, but you know that initially the etzem meaning of chet, ches tes aleph, is to miss the mark. When you shoot an arrow, you shoot a gun or something at a target and you miss, so you're ches tes aleph, you're missing the mark. So chet means to make mistakes. So odam en tzadik ba'oretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yechtov. People make mistakes. People make mistakes. There's of course always a vast danger of the mistake snowballing and leading me astray. So if I can latch onto chachma, it means I can latch onto a system, a received system of wisdom, that such and such is so and so. These are the appropriate reactions. This is what I ought to be doing. This is what I ought to be thinking. These are the ideas or the attitudes which I ought to foster. So that can lend enormous strength to my Yiddishkeit, to anything. It means I know where I stand. So, yeah. Because that's a big arichas to bring all the psukim and the rayas. There is a sefer, if you can get a hold of it, it would be nice. The yeshiva has it. It's not imprinted. The yeshiva has two copies, as a matter of fact, but one is lent out. It's called Gan No'ul. It's a very interesting sefer. I'll tell you a little bit about the background if you're interested. The sefer Gan No'ul is a very, very remarkable book. It's about the size of a nice thickish sefer, and it has exactly one purpose to it, and that is to define the concept chachma. It's a really an interesting work. The first half of the sefer, in X number of ma'amorim, I don't remember how many, defines chachma in all its ramifications, and the second half of the sefer goes through systematically every word where where chacham, chachma, hischakem, whatever it is used in Tanakh, and explains it on the basis of the Yesodos. Now, this sefer was written by somebody called Naftali Hertz Wiesel, whom you may or may not have heard of. He was a very controversial person in the time of the Noda Behuda, some sofer these Yidden. But an interesting, very interesting person. In a way, a very good person, in a way, a very dangerous person. He wrote a sefer called Yain Levonon on Pirkei Avos, which she also has, by the way. Just an unbelievable Peirush on Pirkei Avos, a really, really beautiful Peirush, on which he has a Haskama from the Noda Behuda, which is, I've never seen such a Haskama. It's a very, very, very enthusiastic and really, really big Haskama from Noda Behuda with one sentence in it, which is that all this is provided you stay on the straight and narrow path and don't stray away from it. Now, eventually he did just that, or at least he did that in the eyes of many of the Gedolim of the time. He cooperated with Mendelssohn in translating the Torah into German and writing the so-called Biur. You've heard of that. You've heard of Moshe Mendelssohn, right? So he wrote this Biur. And this Naftali Hertz Wiesel wrote the Vayikrot to the Biur. Later on, they put him into all kinds of charomim of David Tevli, who was the grandfather of the Nachlas David. Why? Because the emperor of the Austro-Hungarian Empire made a law, passed a edict, to be mechayev that all Yiddish children should have to have some secular education too. In other words, kids used to go to cheder, they used to learn, and that's it. And they weren't usually able to talk the language, or they didn't have much secular education at all. And so this was an edict. So this Naftali Hitzwiesel wrote a public letter, an open letter to the Jewish communities called Divrei Sholem Ve'emes, in which he was very much pro this edict. In other words, he wrote this letter to encourage people to cooperate, because he looked around and he saw big chesroinus in the chinuch as it was at the time. You know, kids, much of the problems which we're grappling with today when we want to decide how much secular education do we give our children, and so on and so forth. And he talked about the Indian of having a decent panos, and the Indian of having some education in the nimus of how to behave, and so on and so forth. He saw people growing up in a sort of with not such nice tichunas and so on. Anyway, so he wrote such a letter, Divrei Sholem Ve'emes, which of course was interpreted by many of the Gedolim as an attack on Torah, on an attack of the Messiah, as it was in Chinuch. And so there were big polemic. There was he was put into Cherem, and he created a big stir. Subsequently, he wrote three more letters defending his original stand and showing that he hadn't really meant it and so on, or he had meant it differently. I always have the feeling that if you have to write three letters to explain what you wrote in one letter, if you read his forum, what comes across is a very, very good person, but not very wise. I mean, not very wise in the ways of the world. In other words, not sort of a chacham haraya es hanoilad. You don't get the impression that he was in any way a wicked person or somebody who wanted to undermine Torah. If you see his forum, you see that's not that way. It just isn't so. But apparently he was not enough chochom to be Royas HaNoilat and to see what he could do. Anyway, so there's a lot of interesting things. You have some time once and you want to read up about him. It's interesting. And it's an interesting period in history. Anyway, so one of his big yesoidas, incidentally, I don't know whether intentionally or non-intentionally, the Malbim builds his Perush on Mishle on this Sefer, but he doesn't quote it by its full name. So whether sort of he hesitated quoting it because of the fuss that was made about it, or whether it was just that's why he calls it Sefer HaGan instead of Gan Na'ul. But if you look in the Malbim, right at the beginning of Mishle, where he defines the terms which are used in Mishle, among them Chachma, which is of course the basis of Mishle. So he bases his whole Perush on Mishle on this Sefer HaGan. This is the Gan Noel of Naftali Hitzwiesel. Anyway, so he brings many, many rayas that Chachma is never used in the sense of Chiddush, it's never used in the sense of smartness. But Chachma is received with him. Right? So versteht man allein that there is a great deal of the safety net in being a mekabel from a solid and good Messiah. There is, of course, a built-in danger to that also. In other words, if my reactions are sort of knee-jerk reactions based on a particular Messiah, that may generate mistakes because the circumstances may be sufficiently different from the ones within which that Mesorah grew, so that I make mistakes. And that's not an easy decision to make. In other words, when do I react to things as my Rebbe did, or as my Moisrim did, or when do I ask myself whether the circumstances are sufficiently similar? Rav Gifton said a very interesting yisoid in his hesped. He gave a hesped on Rav Hutner's Erev Tov Livracha. The Aguda convention was on when Rav Hutner was nifted, and at the convention he said a hesped, which I wasn't there to hear, but I heard it on a tape later on. And he said, very, very interesting, ha'orim. The Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, the Tana. So Rabbi Eliezer said, Me'olam lo shamati dovash lo shamati merabbeisai. Rabbi Eliezer says that I've never said anything which I didn't hear from my rabbis. And they never said anything new. In the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, which is the same Rabbi Eliezer, it says that Rabbi Eliezer used to be mechadish devorim shloish shamosan oizen mimois, I think Yeshua ben Nun. That he said such unbelievable chidushim, which had never been heard since Yeshua ben Nun. So that sounds like a little stira, right? I mean, on the one hand you're saying that he never said anything new. On the other hand, he said vast chidushim. Any of you want to try your hands at answering? Yeah? Beautiful. Yeah, very, very good. Yeah, and that's precisely what he said. In other words, that he said unbelievable chidushim, but he said the precise chidushim which his Rebbe, faced with the same problem, would have said. Right? In other words, he was so much a Talmud of his Rabbeim, he knew their mindset, he knew the values, he knew the ideas, knew the immutable emesis which they had as the basis of their thinking, and he was wise enough and able enough to analyze new situations or new problems which arose with which the Rebbe had not been faced, but to solve it in the way and in the light in which his Rebbe would have done. But of course, that takes a sort of a two koichos, which in a sense are a little stilitic, which are a little contradictory. In other words, I started off by saying it's a sort of balancing act between a passivity and an activity, which is not easy to balance. To be hyperactive isn't good. In other words, to do my thing, and this is the way I understand it, and this is the way I analyze it, and this is what I believe to be the truth, unguided or unreined in, as it were, with a solid Masorah, I can be in very, very bad shape. I can do all kinds of wrong things. Interesting story. Rav Elia Svay said in a talk, you remember, there was a while back, there were these mechos when there was the machlokes about the shetachim. Told the meisim, said that Rav Shach had said over this meisim that during the first World War, there was an issue in Russia. The front was uncomfortably close to many of the Jewish communities, little towns, villages, kehillas, which were scattered around, and the fighting was getting close. So there was a sort of overall committee of people, you know, Jewish community representatives who got together to try and work out what was best for the community. And they sat down and they tried to find out what ought to be the reaction of the community, what they could do in order to keep things as good, as advantageous as possible. So they came up with one great idea, and that was that they would go around and collect all the Sifrei Torah, except leaving only one in every community for daily use, or whatever it is when you need a Sifrei Torah, so that the rest of the Sifrei Torah should be out of danger. So they'd have a vault or something in Petersburg, which later on became Leningrad, and that's where they would keep the Sifrei Torah, and they'd be safe from the fighting. So the shliach, the fellow who was supposed to be in charge of that, or one of the people who was supposed to be in charge of that, came to Dvinsk, where the Oysomer was, the Meir Simcha. And he came along and he said, listen, I'm representative of the Vaat HaKehillahs, whatever it is, and this is the decision we made. We'd like you to give us the Sifrei Torah and we'll take care of them until after the war. So he said, no, I don't wish to cooperate. I'm going to keep the Sifrei Torah. Why not? It's a good idea. So he says, no, because the Gemara says that Stoka Osa Kadosh Baruch Hu in Yisrael Shepizran Bein Ha'umas. That was that within the Golos situation, there is a milah to be scattered. It's not an unmixed blessing to have everything localized together, because we know it very well from current history. That was if all Yidden and Golos would have been in one place, so the constant korbanos which took place would lemaisa have annihilated the whole of Klal Yisrael. It's only because Yidden were scattered all over the place that if there was a churban in one place, there was always a place to go to. In our own generation, people from Europe were able to go to America or to Eretz Yisrael and so on. So Meir Simcha Taina that Chazal Megalitas, that in a Golus situation, Pizur rather than Kinus is what we want. So he says, it's not a milah to have all the Sifrei Torah in one place. The Uvda is that what happened was that all the Sifrei Torah which were taken to Leningrad when it became communist were destroyed, and Dvinsk remained part of Latvia, and the communists had no shaitas till it was much, much later. And the Sifrei Torah of Dvinsk was saved. So, what's that? In other words, what happened over here? Here there was a tension between unrestrained activity and certain degree of passivity. In other words, the Oysomer was trying to relax. Not always what we think is right. There's something to learn from a Masorah. There's something to learn from the way Chazal stellt a weg besach. I had trouble with that Meister, frankly, because I asked Aveli about it once to explain it to me exactly what he meant to illustrate with that, because in my way of thinking, it seemed a little bit to be sois to this other thing which I told you, you know, Rav Eliezer. Now, it's not always right to do what so-and-so did in the last generation. In other words, perhaps the circumstances are different. I mean, it's obviously not true to say that under no circumstances is kinus ever good, right? I mean, as a matter of fact, the Hashgacha had gefeared that things worked out that way. I mean, it wasn't the Gzeiras HaKosov. It could have been that the communists wouldn't have come and the Sifrei Torah would have been safe in Leningrad. In other words, is it an absolute to say that it's never good to put all your Sifrei Torah in a vault? Maybe it is. I mean, it seems unreasonable to say that because there is a Chazal that Pizur has its advantages. I don't believe that it's either stated or implied in that Chazal that no kinnus can ever be good under any circumstance. So what exactly is the point of that Meisah? So explain to me, and I can live with that for sure, and I can understand that. And I was that not what the Oysomer was saying was that
that there can be no merit in kinnis. I don't think that would have been reasonable. But I think that the issue was that he said, not so fast. Hold your horses. There is such a derech too. In other words, it's not the way that in Shitrius a person might think, like a person who's very active, a person who is very, very enamored of his own thinking and enamored of his own activity. So he might say, come on, let's get going. We've got to do something about this. So prudence, in the form of the Asamea, said, relax. There are other drachim too. And as long as we don't know very, very clearly that the active way, the pi'ilus, is the better one, let's not get all hot under the collar. Let's relax a little bit and see whether maybe the other there may not be just as effective. So it's a difficult balancing act. Now, it's what do I do? And I think that Kahelis a little bit is tackling this problem over here. In other words, on the one hand, you have this HaChokhmo Torah, the Baaleon, more than the 10 Shalitim beer. But then there's also the danger always of being too passive. In other words, not to use your Seichel altogether. Because, really, a person, Reinsham gave us Seichel, and he wants us to think. He wants us to be able to take achrayus for what we do. If our seichel is mechayev, that over here the mesoira is machriya, fine, then I follow the mesoira, but I don't follow the mesoira like Mr. Pavlov's dogs, but I follow the mesoira because my seichel was mechayev me over here, that this is what the Ratzon Hashem is under these circumstances. If my seichel tells me that in this circumstance the Rebbe would have paskened anders, so that's what I have to do. So let's look a little bit what Kahelis has to say about that. It's a little devious, but we'll get there. He says, Gam l'chol ha'dvarim asher yidaberu al titen libecha. He said, it's a very good idea not to hear too much. Don't listen to what everybody has to say. Gam l'chol ha'dvarim asher yidaberu al titen libecha. Don't eavesdrop. Don't listen. What does he say? What does he say? What does he say? What does he say? Asher lo sishma es avdecho mekalelecha. You're going to be putting your ear to too many keyholes to find out what's being said. One of these days you're going to get a shock. And you're going to hear your evet be mekalel you. You're going to hear some nasty things said about you. And not by somebody from whom you might expect it, but from your own evet, whom one would suppose, or whom you would be justified in supposing, that he's loyal to you, and that he likes you, that he appreciates you, is if you walk around listening and listening and listening, one of these days you're going to hear what you don't want to hear, and that is that your evet is being mekalel you. Huh? No, it's not good. Because we'll soon see why the evet is mekalel him. Yeah? It's not a pleasant kind of klola. It's not a constructive kind of klola. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a klola. Right? Let's go and see it. Ki gam to'omim rabois yoda libecha asher gam ato kilalto acherem. So then you shouldn't be surprised when you hear klolas from other people addressed to you, because you also often are mekalel others. So, it's a tchunas ha-nefesh to be mekalel. It's a human trait to want to be mekalel. So you are mekalel others. So don't be surprised if you hear others being mekalel you. Now you notice that in the Atar, you have a Greek sif. The Atar is written Aleph Tov, which is really At. Right? And it's read Atar. Now, why would that be? In other words, what is the function of the creek sieve over here? Now, I don't know whether we've covered that. I'm sure we have sometime during this year, and I don't know whether recently, that when you have a creek sieve in the Torah, that the Tanakh, that the word is written in one way and pronounced in a different way, the theory usually is as follows. That what's being conveyed is a form and an essence. Now, what I mean by that is as follows. The written word is further removed from me. The written word stands as an object. It's independent of me. It stands by itself. The spoken word, the way I read a word, so that's already the impression of the word as it travels through me. So because of that, the written word tends to be more objective, the spoken word more subjective. The Kri is the way the action or unit appears. The Ksiv is its essence, what makes it tick. That's a big cloud which we have all over. Now over here, it means like this. He's talking to a man, so that the right way is the Ato, right? Ki peomim rabim, she'ato kilalto acherem. But the Ksiv over here is indicative of what it is that makes you tick. When you are mekallel other people, what makes you want to be mekallel other people? Why should you be mekallel other people? What is it in a person that has the need to pull other people apart? Why do you want to say nasty things about other people? Why do you want to see nasty things in other people? So that's what the pasuk is being megale. That's an at. That's the isha in the ish. That's the weaker, passive part of the person which is afraid. See, and that is a very, very yesoidistika nakuda, which we need to know. You take the masculine and the feminine, the ish and the isha, as symbols of the passive and the active, right? That's how it is in Metzius. The Isha is the Mashpia, the Isha is the Mushpa'as, the Isha is the Initiator, the Isha is the Bias. And what's the place to say? Learned it already? And Isha Karesas Bris, Elo Lemisha. I saw clearly you had a no in the Sugya. Mifka Toket, Gurumach Varet. So, a person who sinks into passivity, that means who refuses or is afraid to take responsibility for his actions, he's a very scared kind of person. He's somebody who's very, very, very unsure of himself, because he's not going to be able to defend himself very well when his positions are attacked. I have this and this shit. Not because I thought it through, but because I was told that this is such and such. Now, what is my defense when somebody comes along and says, hey, doesn't make much sense. Look, I can show you this, I can show you that. It's not that way. What do you say to that? Or what am I going to say? So I'll say you're an apikoros, or you don't know, you just don't understand. But in other words, I'll hit back because maybe he's right. And if he's right, it's awfully uncomfortable because I don't want him to be right. Much nicer if he's wrong. And my handhoge, which is based on an unthinking kind of
Planes is very, very cozy. So therefore, I'm uncomfortable. I feel impotent if people deserve my respect, if people stand there and have opinions, have deus, have strength, have an active intellect. So what do I do about it? So I'm a color of them. I tear them apart. That's the Eved in me. Asher Tishma is Abdecha Mekalelecha. Right? The Eved, Vinim of an Isha. The Eved is the symbol of passivity. The Eved is the Mushpa, the Ordin is the Mashpia. So the tendency of a person to be Mekalel others derives from the fact that I feel attacked by them. I can't communicate because I'm in constant danger. I can't grant you respect. I can't grant you legitimacy because then what's going to happen to me? So I lash out. I'm a kallel. I regard you as kal, I regard you as lightweight, I regard you as unworthy of having ideas which I ought to take seriously. But let's say that a person is perfectly strong in his deus. He knows what he's talking about. He's thought it through, he's examined the pros, he's examined the cons. He knows precisely what he holds and why he holds that way, or if the thing which we're talking about is something which is nimsa to him from the Masorah, he knows the whys and the wherefores. He can cite historical precedent to show the correctness. If he's the Isomer, he'll demonstrate to the fellow who collected the Sifrei Torah that Pizur is good, not bad. Then he can grant the other person validity, he can grant him respect, he can grant him legitimacy. And he doesn't have to curse him out altogether. He may not be able to win him over in an intellectual argument. Many times there are different stodim to a shaila, and many times it's perfectly legitimate to view a given circumstance from a different standpoint. Doesn't always have to be just one single solution to every problem. But I can lend it legitimacy. I can respect the person. I don't have to tear him apart. So I think that that's the hemshach over here. And the next few psukim, which we won't have time to go through tonight, there's a hemshach to this idea. In other words, the stira, the placing next to each other these two yesidus. In other words, the enormous need of a solid, reliable, helpful Masorah, but the attendant danger of allowing it to lull you into avdus. The danger which comes with a Masorah, which says, don't think, be a knee-jerk person, just react. That's not good. Because then you'll become an Eved who is Mekalel. That's not good either. It's a very, very important yesod. Very important yesod. Shmoneh Esrei, the very first tzorach, the very first need which a person has right after the giving of the shyness, very most basic need of an Odom, Bashehu Odom, is Das. Sechel, understand? Ato chonen le Odom Das, Mlamed le Nashbina,
We ask Hashem to grant us das. And what's the function of das? Well, we were made tonight what the function of das was. How? No? You were all made tonight what the function of das is. Huh? That's right. That's why we say Havdalah in Atachanan. Why do we say Havdalah in the first bracha, Atachan Antona? Well, it says because Havdalah belongs to the bracha of Das. In Ein Das, Havdalah Minayim. The ability to be Mavdil ben Kodesh Lechol is a function of the mind. It's not a function of the emotions. It's not a function of anything. In Kodesh Lechol, that's not so easy to be Mavdil, right? You have Shabbos, you have Sunday. What's the difference? Same sun rises, same sunsets. And this is Shabbos and this is Sunday. That's a difficult thing to be mafkan. Yes, sir?
What do we have to
the
Kofa?
Huh?
What do we have to
the in that bracha? Because we're talking about the basic function of a person, of a ben Adam. And the thing that defines him as a ben Adam is das, not chachma. Chachma is an important thing. It's something which has to provide the background for me to use my das effectively. But the thing that makes me human is das. Right? Moses says, in Ein, das, yeah, the dobe, kulebe, the lo dobe, mabe. Moses says, somebody has das, he has everything. Somebody doesn't have das, nothing. That's the difference between a human being and a not human being. The difference lies in the intellect, in the ability to be mavdil. But you cannot be mavdil. It's impossible to be mavdil without using your head. Concomitantly, it's impossible to use your head without a masara. You got to know. You got to have been guided into the values which enable you to appreciate Kedusha and Chayil. It's no use asking some guy to be Mabdil ben Kodesh Lechayil if he doesn't know what Kedusha is. And Kedusha, the appreciation of Kedusha, the knowledge of Kedusha, the ability to feel Kedusha is not a function of the mind. That's a function of other parts of the human being. It has to do with Masorah. But to be a mensch, there has to be the function of the seichel solidly based and solidly rooted in the Messiah. Very interesting aside. I said it over before, a little late, but I'll just tell you this because it sort of belongs into what we're talking. Next week we'll continue a little bit. But it's worthwhile saying over, remembering. There's a shaila, a historical shaila, a shaila of historical interest. You all know, or you may not know, that the Rashba, the Shaitan, issued a cheren on the study of philosophy under the age of 40. There was a period when lots of Deus, Sakonas from Deus Koizvois, people were being schlepped away from Yiddishkeit. So the Rashba issued a cheren to ask the people to study philosophy under 40 years of age. And it's of more than passing interest to ask why, although all the Gedolei Olam signed on that cheren, the Ritva did not. The Ritva was a contemporary, did not sign on that cheren. So it's a legitimate question, why not? Of course, anything is conjecture, a long time ago, but can we try and understand why the Ritva didn't sign on that cheren? So somebody who wrote a history of the Ritva specifically the people who are bringing out the Ritva and Etzisol. Now, you know, there's a new edition of the Ritva, so in one of the volumes they have a little overview of his life. So this person suggested, Rick Thomas Chacham, who wrote the Hagos on the Ritva, and he also wrote his life, so he suggested that the Ritva didn't have time. He was more on inside of Rosh Yeshiva. He was busy with his tshuvas, with his talmidim, and he didn't want to get mixed into communal issues like that. Somebody wrote on that's a very, very weak and not very happy kind of a solution. I mean, if the Rashba could find the time, Ritva could have found the time. Right, the Rashba also wrote, how many tshuvas are there from the Rashba? Probably the 3,000, right? So, if it was Vichtig, it could have been Vichtig for the Ritva also. Why didn't he sign? So this person suggested a different solution. The solution which he suggested was as follows. There's a very, very interesting sefer from the Ritva called Sefer HaZikoron, which is a sefer which the Ritva wrote in order to preempt the kashyas which the Ramban asks on the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim. You know, the Rambam wrote a sefer Moreh Nevuchim, and the Ramban, Chumash especially, has a lot of kashyas on the Rambam. So the Ritva wrote a sefer HaZikoron to answer up, to defend the Rambam against the Ramban's kashyas. That's a very interesting thing, because the Ramban was the Ritva's Rebbe, and if you've learned Ritva, which you have, you know that there's no page in the Ritva where he doesn't quote the Ramban 25 times. He was his Rabbi Muvak, it wasn't actually his Rabbi, it was the Rabbi of his Rabbi, but he stood squarely in the tradition of the Ramban. Ritva quotes the Moreh Nevuchim in Shas, I think, twice. And then, I can't tell you from my own experience, but this is what this writer writes. I can't tell you. I don't know the Ritva in Shas. But, so, why bother? In other words, why write a sefer to schlug up your own Rebbe in defense of a sefer which wasn't particularly meaningful to you, not very important, not very significant? If you don't quote it more than twice in the whole of Shas, it didn't mean much. So why would the Ritva want to do that? So he says that the answer may be contained in one little sentence in the Sefer HaZikoron. Very, very interesting little sentence. And that is in the right at the beginning of Vayera. You have the famous Ramban, you probably have seen it. But the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim writes, he has a shetah with the Malachim, always when it says about Malachim, that it didn't really happen in a real sense, it was all B'mare HaNevuah. It wasn't that these Malachim actually came and that Avraham went and shechted the thing, yeah? It was all B'mare HaNevuah. That's the Rambam. And the Ramban has a long, long Ramban over there to disprove that and to show that all these things did in fact happen to Pashto. So the Ritva, in consonance with his intention of writing a sefer to defend the Rambam from the Ramban's Hasagas, writes why it's possible that the Rambam is right.